here that have been asked, they're good questions. And there's not much time to answer them, and I'd still like to do Namu chant with you. So I'll read the questions to you and see what comes out. I've been struggling to find the healthy balance of confidence and humility. I'd like to hear your suggestions. Who asked this question? Niti, oh. The confidence that we come from when we work from the Dhamma is different than the confidence that is of a worldly nature based on information, based on physical strength, based on learned skills, professional skills. And the skills that the Buddha teaches us come from a different place. They're born of clarity, of seeing things as they truly are. So we have confidence in what is real, not in what is false. What can really blossom in us is a wisdom that endows and blesses us with confidence. It doesn't belong to us. It's not because of our particular attributes, age, education. It's beyond that. And it helps us to understand the treasure that we have within us. So that kind of confidence is verified by our practice and by our ability to see reality, to see the truth of things very clearly, more and more clearly, more in a way that informs consciousness and frees us from the shackles of worldly activity, aims, investments. We're no longer watching the value of our possessions rise and fall with the winds of change, but we go beyond the changing conditions to the unconditioned, and we have we develop a confidence that is based on that kind of understanding. So it comes from right view, right intention or right aspiration, and right conduct, right speech. Right speech, right action, right livelihood. So we conduct ourselves rightly. It's a confidence based in purity, purity of heart, purity of activity. It's all following the Eightfold Noble Path. So we become like lotus flower, rise above the mud. But our roots are still in the world. We're still active in the world. But we're no longer trying to be confident in worldly ways, like to be better than somebody else, because this is based on wrong view, or to succeed, but to live righteously, rightly, to practice well and to realize the Dhamma within us. So that is such a sublime practice. It takes all our energy, all our best effort to accomplish that. We have to devote ourselves to it so deeply that it's humbling, because we struggle to let go. We struggle to abandon our attachments and to put down the delights and pleasures that we have discovered in worldly ways, to orient our minds to the truth. So it's very humbling to see what a magnificent and yet what an arduous journey that can be, and how much dedication it requires. That is very humbling. And so we do have confidence and humility together, but they are of a different fiber than the way we normally use these words. Does that help? Okay. There are many I could spend a retreat just on this topic. But that's just a little glimmer of an opinion. Could you please explain, comment on reflection, contemplation from a Buddhist perspective? Who asked this question? Hello. So reflection, just think of it as looking deeply into the mind, and contemplation and reflection are quite similar, but reflecting on is holding things, turning them one way and another way, turning them even upside down to better understand every aspect of what we're seeing rather than just believing what we're told. This is a basket. How do you know? Well, you can reflect on it. What is it made of? What is its function? How does it serve? Does it serve or does it not? Should we get rid of it or should we keep it? We do this internally regarding our conduct and speech and thoughts. We reflect on our condition. Is the mind well? Is it not well? Are we exuding goodwill or malevolence? Are we bringing joy or concern, worry, harm to ourselves and others? We reflect, we stop, we pause, and we open our eyes in a new way. This is a kind of reflection. We also offer reflections to each other as spiritual friends, so we try to mirror. We try to help each other to see better. So in that way, the word reflect is very good, because the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, you know, you're looking in the mirror, oh. But we're not looking for beauty and facial beauty, physical beauty. We're looking for the moral beauty, the purity of heart. You can see that in the mirror of your heart. So if you look at your own reflection, literally, within the mind heart, then you begin to see how to purify that, how to polish. Like there's a wonderful image in the suttas of a bronze dish. When you hide it in a cupboard, it becomes tarnished and it sits there unused. And when you pull it out and use it every day, you clean it first, you polish it, and if you keep it out, you end up using it so it stays shiny. So to use these good qualities of the mind, the heart, to perfect ourselves, to grow in wisdom, to grow in patience, to grow in selflessness, to grow in generosity, to grow in loving kindness, to grow in compassion, to grow in equanimity. These are qualities to develop. So in that way, as we reflect, we begin to see how to completely polish until it's absolutely transparent. What we reflect then is the truth of the emptiness of all things. That's the direction we're going. And the contemplation is, again, it's just stopping to understand better, seeing more clearly, clarifying the mind stream so it's not a jumble and a tumble of confused concepts, but to bring forth our intuitive wisdom. And meditation is a way of contemplation. It's not just a concentration, which really better translation of that. It's not only calming the mental fabrications, but it's contemplating the mental process and what it actually is when we experience it. Not by thinking, but by stopping to understand. And through meditation we can do that. We can use contemplations of death. We can use contemplations of the body. We can use contemplations of mental process. We can use contemplations of the qualities of the Buddha and of the qualities of that which we revere most in our hearts and what we want to develop. So that's very brief because the clock is ticking and we have no more. So this question, I am wondering what the biggest challenges are for you in terms of protecting your mind, and which precepts or practices help you the most with protecting your mind against these. Well, we've talked about this at length, and I haven't said it personally, but I think you can pretty much guess. If you haven't, then we'll have another retreat. Can answer this question. So, but now, chanting is a wonderful protective practice. It's non-conceptual, as I mentioned before. It comes from the very deepest wellspring of the heart, and it helps us to release all kinds of poisons, contaminants, grit and grind that obstruct our view and make us feel heavy, so we can lighten the mind through chanting. And today I would like to suggest that we have two groups. It's pretty even, and right down the middle here. You want to do both? You'll be on this side. So do Namo, and do Namo, but we'll start differently, and then we can really process together, intertwine like ivy up into the ether, into the space, up the trees, up into the heart, and become like one thread eventually. So I'll start. Ayanimala will back me up. And remember, you're on your own. Let go. Don't write this down. We're chanting now. This is not something to write. We're chanting. So put the world down totally. Put down the paper, the pen, the devices for sure. And chant with your heart open, so that you're, at first we're a little self-conscious, but let that fall away and pretty much go into your voice. Don't show off, but just open your heart and let your heart speak. So that if you want to go soprano or a bass tone or whatever's comfortable, you know, and let that just merge into everyone else's sound as it does, naturally, not in a contrived way. That's really what I'm suggesting. Namo.
Namo
sitting, walking, lying down. You can try to chant and see, just to let it flow and let it flow. And in this way, into the flow of sound, you can toss all your suffering into that and let it flow. Just let it be. The suffering is not the problem. It's our holding of it, how we hold it. That's the suffering. And that's the end of a day. Thank you for your presence, your practice, your love, your attention, your aspiration for Nibbana. May you be well, happy, peaceful and blessed. May we all attain to the highest. May we all be free. And expressing so much gratitude to everyone who helped to organize, to our dear hosts June and Brock, to our sound people, our chair organizers, our shrine creator, our food preparers and offerers, and every single one of you that have contributed to this happening. May many such occasions arise for you. And may all those to whom we've dedicated receive our love and intentions.